Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, I'm Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carrie Adloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
the Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carrie Ads Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you.
Welcome to Weirdos, Sarah and Carrie Ads Weirdos Book Club. I hope you had a nice Christmas.
Yeah, I hope it was full of reading and books and just really civilised, cultured conversation with your family. It starts with a heavy breathing of my feeding 10-week-old.
Yeah, it's not us heavy breathing at you.
Heavy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. Did you like your books?
Milky, wasn't it?
You hopefully have listened to our Christmas gift guide that came out last week. And this week, what we're going to do is our best of the books that we wanted to share with you, but we didn't have time to, and the books that we wanted to read and we didn't have time to.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Ambitious readers.
Ambitious readers.
Everyone who loves books has a to-read pile.
Mine is going to kill me. It's so high on my bedside table.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah. It's towering over me. It's taller than the bedside lamp now. You've got loads.
And then I've almost like burying them.
Yeah.
Hiding them and sort of forgetting they're there so I can keep book shopping.
Yeah, because you want to do more. I can't do any more book shopping while it exists. And also while we have this podcast, I just feel like I have constant homework.
Whereas so. I've gone, brilliant, tax deductible. If they dare question me about my book buying, I'll show them to this podcast and go, it's called research, tax
Sarah
ma'am.
Sarah started a book podcast so she could buy books.
Yeah, so I can legitimise.
So there are quite a few books that we wanted to kind of talk about, or we didn't have the right guest.
Or that just don't fit with Weirdos
don't
Book
fit,
Club.
Yeah.
Because the Weirdos Book Club is supposed to be about sort of outsiders and feeling more normal. And
well, one of those books I think we should talk about is The Brilliant Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin.
Which I think we will do at some point.
I hope we will do, yeah. That, if you haven't read that, oh, so good.
Surely everyone's read it.
Not everyone has.
Yeah, I think so.
I know you're in the elite readers society of people who've like, if it was a bestseller.
It's very, very popular.
It was so
lots
popular.
Of the shops made it sort of their book of the year. Or one
and
of
it was one of those
year.
Books that I avoided for a bit because I thought, oh, everyone's going on about it. And then when I read it, I was like, rightly so.
Yeah.
So good. It's about friendship. It's about computer games, which put off one of my weedy friends.
Yeah, and me a bit originally.
Yeah, who was like, oh, it's not for me. And I was like, no, you don't have to be into computer games. No. It's about friendship.
And actually, it makes you more into computer games or appreciate the beauty of what computer games offer people, especially story games.
Yeah.
A place to exist.
It's just like connection.
Yeah.
And I think it's, for me, it's a really amazing book about working with your friends. And how difficult that is to work with your friends.
Oh, okay. Celebration of working with your friends.
But like
how awful it is when your friend's there.
Like the joy of it and the tension of it.
Yeah.
And what it means to work with people that they're not just colleagues that you both like that you love. But I definitely shout out to that one.
Yeah.
Is there one you want to say that we didn't cover that you hoped we did?
I've sort of gone, so the book I've most recently, the one I finished last night.
Oh yes.
Is Doppelgangers by Naomi Klein.
This
so I kept
amazing.
Bringing it
yeah.
up. So she was published the same week as Weirdo came out. So I was very aware of all of the books because I was like, you know, reading press and stuff. And I read a long review of it, probably in The Guardian or The Observer. And it just sounded so fascinating. And it's about her fascination with Naomi Wolf, but they kept being confused.
Yeah.
And Naomi Wolf had what she calls a sort of diagonal move from being sort of liberal on the left to becoming not just right wing, but, you know, a conspiracy theorist, anti-vaxxer, on Steve Bannon's podcast all the time. And so actually, it's an area of politics I've not paid any attention to because I find it strange and upsetting. But so it's really interesting to as an insight into that. And then the very last chapter, so she's obsessed with doppelgangers in general. And so like Philip Roth wrote a book about having a doppelganger to himself. And so she's done so much research because she's so fascinated in the idea of it. It's really, the whole book is fascinating, actually. And, you know, sometimes, especially when you're lonely with children and what you feel really starved of is conversation, there are books, non-fiction books like Doppelgangers by Naomi Klein that feel like a really fascinating conversation with lots of like facets. And rather than being dogmatic about a certain view, she really sort of pulls herself up or then goes, oh, I learned this during COVID. Mm. Her husband is a politician, and she was really shocked by what she found, which essentially was like wellness, you know, yoga teachers, all these people she thought would be on their side, who were the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And so, and that area of the thing that happened in COVID.
Slope. Yeah.
But it's the most in-depth I've thought about something that I've sort of seen going on in my peripheral vision.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds amazing.
It's really good.
Yeah, I want to borrow that one now you finish with it. Another one we both read, which I don't know if it actually came out this year, was Sally Rooney's Beautiful World, Where Are You? Mm. I think it came out in paperback because I read it this year, but you, I think you'd read it when it first came out.
Yeah, I was excited for the Rooney.
I kindled it.
I'm very basic. I'm very excited for a Sally Rooney.
So this is interesting because we've read all of Sally's, she is to us.
Yeah. And actually, because we'll probably grow old with her.
Yes.
We'll probably always be like that.
Oh, it's like being alive at Mantel when she's just first publishing.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm
just
happy
like
about
read
that.
Them at the time, yeah.
Yeah, because Mantel's, she's carked it. So
we'll be like the grandmother who's read all of Iris Murdoch
kind of thing. Oh, God, I can't wait for that.
Yes.
Oh, let me tell you.
Oh, you've just discovered Miss Rooney.
Oh, I assume you've read Conversations with Friends, otherwise before, I do not wish to have this conversation with you.
Before books were holograms, but they were just written down.
Before AI.
Yeah.
Sally used to write herself. I love Sally Rooney. And I know lots of people are very, either like us, mega fans, or so snobby about her.
I think it's the Fleabag effect.
Yeah.
I think she was so popular that people think they're interesting to be instantly critical. Not that anyone is above criticism.
It happens so quickly.
Yeah.
Because it's like,
pushback.
Conversation with Friends, amazing. And then Normal People, obviously
stratospheric.
And then the TV show during lockdown, stratospheric.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I just saw this hot take being like, she's not that good.
Well, Will Self had a very early hot take.
Oh, Will Self.
Will Self and his son sort of pointed out how jealous he was. Did you remember this on Twitter?
No,
that this was the fun side of it.
Oh,
was that Will Self was snobby.
No, that's not a headline.
And his son basically said that he was jealous.
Oh.
But sort of, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be that good a writer and that commercially successful, that's what everybody's
aiming
for.
She's a young woman.
Yeah. And so when this one came out, I saw lots of people being like, oh, it's not very good. And it's about her being so successful and it's really hard to relate to. So I didn't run to it.
Oh, yeah.
And I bought it on Kindle.
Whereas I saw Hard to Be Successful. She's written this for me.
And both of us then sort of had to like privately admit to each other that we liked it.
I really liked it.
I really liked it too.
I understand.
I didn't like it as much as the others, I have to say.
I understand why. And I also understand that will happen with some books.
Ooh.
Is that if you absolutely love one thing for what it gives you and then the author gives you something else at a different pace. I thought that this book had a lot of polemic in it. There were messages between the characters which felt like Sally Rooney not exploring how a character behaves, but what they think about, what concerns them.
It definitely felt like you were getting Sally Rooney's take on stuff as well.
Yeah, some thoughts. Also, how people keep creating things when they've been so popular that it makes it difficult. And to be really popular, the other side of that is you become so criticised.
Yeah.
You become...
And isolated.
Dismissed.
That character is completely isolated.
Yeah.
But I thought what... Because I get it, like the main character is this like globally successful author. It's like, oh, what an everyday character.
But men do that all the time.
Yeah, and also
male novelists write so many books about male novelists.
But I think she was quite critical of that life, and she was quite like she dealt with like the isolation and the sadness. Like I felt like she gave a very nuanced view. It wasn't like, haha, here's me with all my money and my books. Fuck you guys. It was like that character.
That's novel four. She just becomes a rapper.
She's just beautiful
dancing.
World.
She's just dancing on a Bentley.
Where are you?
Flicking money at
everyone. I felt like if you could get past that character's success, there was a very interesting book, but I can understand that initial, like, oh my God, it's like someone moaning about their diamond shoes. Like,
yeah.
But I thought people were overly harsh on it, definitely.
I think they were really ready to go, not this one, not for me.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
kind of thing. I had watched this lovely conversation near where I live. There's a very, very small coffee shop that sells wine in the afternoon.
Oh.
And there was a woman.
Mother's dream.
There's a woman slightly younger than me, probably 10 years younger than me, come on. And she was reading Sally Rooney, yeah. this book, with a glass of wine. Oh. So obviously, I mean, just what a great life decision. And it's a horrible, like, there's nothing to look at. There's a train station and a busy road. So it's not like
I know that one.
Yeah. And then this man had done that thing, older man, of like, oh, what are you reading?
Oh, God.
Fuck off, man.
Fuck
off. But she didn't say that because she was sort of like a couple of sips into her wine. Maybe she's just a nicer person than me. And she said to him, I'm reading the new Rooney. My boyfriend won't let me read it in the house. He hates her. But what she said was, he hates her and he's not read any. So I come out to read it and I thought,
him.
I just love everything about this woman.
Yes, but also one day she'll realise she needs to dump that man.
Yeah. Sometimes people's relationships are based on being very different to each other.
No, Sarah. He's banning you from reading a woman's book.
It sounded like she was exaggerating. Joking and exaggerating.
I think he's bad.
Okay. You've made my fun story really dark.
Oh, yeah, that's what I do.
I don't think it's a coercive relationship where she has to hide her reading
habits. I make things seem worse than they are. That's my vibe.
And that's why it's hard to work with your friends.
I feel, and this happens with actresses as well, of like, oh, she's shit, she's rubbish. And I just feel like women who are a similar age to you, who are doing really well, brilliant. It's brilliant. It's amazing that exists. There was a time when it did not exist.
Yeah, and all they had to call themselves Mr. Boobs.
That is not a good pseudonym.
Mr. Boobs. Mr. Camberwell, this is a real beard.
You sound a bit ladylike.
No. And the book's about motherhood, but hiding my huge penis. Please publish me.
CJ Boobs. We like that one. Another one we both read, The List.
Yeah, Superstar, by Yomi Superstar Adigoke. Publishing.
I mean, global, another global success.
We were lucky because we were sent it early, so you got a little amuse-bouche, a little cake with it.
I love that one.
French fancy.
Oh, I didn't get the French fancy.
Oh, no, it's not a French fancy. I'm trying to think of the word.
You get more. You get sent better things.
No.
You do.
No. It came with a little, it's the one you like, you know, with its two halves and in between.
Macaron.
A macaron.
I didn't get sent a macaron.
Yeah, it's like a wedding invitation.
Oh.
Anyway.
If you haven't read it, I think that's a really good Christmas read because it's just a great page turner, great characters.
It's also a good one to talk to your friends about. It's
and
a
it's
social
a good one
book.
To lend, like, I lent that one to my mum as well.
Oh, lovely.
And she was really like, a lot of conversations about like the internet and Instagram and what does it mean when people are successful, how
and
do we know them?
It's great when the story is great and sort of like, you know, a great yarn for itself. But I actually think the same with the Rooney one.
Yeah,
but brings up lots of stuff that's going on currently.
Yeah, very current.
And again, if you're starved of conversation and social things like I am, or have been this year in particular, it's a book that feels like hanging out with friends.
I have visited you.
It's not that I haven't seen anyone. Oh, no, but you know that thing where you go,
I do.
It's been 8 days since you've had like any...
Been 1 week since I looked at you.
Yeah,
sorry.
Exactly.
I would definitely recommend that one. And is it out? No, I don't know if it's out in paperback yet.
Soon. Sure.
It's got a nice purple cover with the emoji, emoji.
Yeah.
And it's basically about an Instagram couple and something happens that reveals something about them.
Yeah, and it's about call-out culture.
Yeah.
And
you do read it. I had read it quite sick, feeling in your stomach of like, oh God, what's going to happen now? What's going to happen?
And it's based on something that's true, which is that people can say things on the internet and they're believed.
Yeah.
And sometimes those things are really true and that's really important. Yeah. And other times it's so dangerous now.
So I definitely recommend that one.
Trial by social media. Anyway, yeah.
One from your list that we didn't get to talk about that I haven't read.
So did you read Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver?
Now, my excuse is my mum read it. She said to me, it's amazing. She gave me the hardback copy.
Yeah.
It's a mantel. It's to break your wrist. So I haven't read it because it's been too heavy to carry around and too heavy at nighttime to hold.
Yeah.
So I should put it on the Kindle.
So it's...
And then you said it made you cry.
Well, it made me cry a lot. I read it, but it's the first book I read after I had Albie. So
not good choice for first
so
postpartum.
So she just won the Women's Prize. And this wonderful thing, she's published by Faber. First of all, I had been put off because I thought, because it's based a little bit on David Copperfield,
yeah.
You know, sometimes there'll be like things where they'll get six writers to write their new invented versions and they feel a bit potboilery.
Yeah, yeah.
But that isn't what this is.
No, it's inspired by it, isn't it?
Inspired by it, but it's a book about modern America, poverty in America, drugs in America, lots of, again, a world that I don't feel familiar with. Barbara Kingsolver is such an incredible writer.
She's amazing. I shout out to her earlier, The Poisonwood Bible,
yes,
which I read when I'm like 21, which is such a good book.
Such a good book.
She writes amazing books.
I loved The Lacuna, which is the one about the Carlos and... Trotsky.
And she's a damn good writer.
And this one's set near where she lives, in the mountains. And she had been offered the Women's Prize previously, but she couldn't get childcare, and so she didn't get to win it. And that's what she said. She gave a lecture at the Women's Prize about childcare and writing. And so that's what spoke so truly to my heart. So I was like, oh, I must read it immediately.
Okay.
Had a baby, started reading it, and was absolutely in floods of tears. And I kept, you know, in Friends where they're like, put the book in the freezer.
I was
at that stage of like, get it away from me, get it away from me. But I needed to find out what happened. And again, that thing of being...
Well, you make me want to read it.
You know, because it's Great Expectations. You know it's going to end up okay at the end. At least that's the one thing you know from the fact that it's...
Dickens, he hopefully gives you redemption, yeah.
But I kept, you know, no, not it's not something else, something else, I'm not this, please, no. But it's absolutely fantastic.
Okay.
And it's one of those books that
feels
real.
And it's now out in paperback.
Yes.
And I've been...
If you're weak-wristed,
I
like
am weak-wristed. That's why Mirror and the Light on the Kindle, mate.
Yeah.
And I read it.
I once had a yoga class.
Yes.
And the teacher said, women always complain they have weak wrists, which is why it's feminist to strengthen them. And she had this whole thing about, they're so weak. She's like, make them strong then. Like, your hands are so important. And since then, I really do my downward dogs going, yeah, come on.
I do so many downward dogs, but when it's a full demon carpet, like to try and lean in the bed and hold the book, tell you what I do, I pile the duvet up and the duvet supports the book.
That is hilarious. I'm going to get you a breastfeeding pillow so you can hold up hardbacks.
But it's such a big one.
I don't think it's excessively big. I think
you've got the paperback.
I haven't. I've got the hardback.
No, you've got the paperback.
I'm going to send you a picture when I get home of the hardback.
One from my list. This is an author that I've been mentioning a lot. I mentioned her last week as well. But just to shout out again to Shirley Hazzard.
Yeah.
Sarah Rolled Her Eyes.
No, I didn't. I was thinking the estate are going to have to start sending you money.
I want the rest of her books.
They'll be like, Hazzard back in the bestseller lists.
Just if you haven't read any, Bay of Noon. And I only discovered her this year. That's why I'm banging on about this year.
And I've started reading Bay of Noon. And awfully it is on
dense,
that to read.
It is
and
dense.
It wasn't because of that reason. I don't know what it was. Probably not too heavy. It's probably too small for my wrist.
Too small for your wrist because you like a strong 17 kg. That's what she's lifting. Bay of Noon and Transit of Venus are the two really famous ones. And the reason I'm banging on about her is she is one of the 20th century's greatest writers. She was friends with Graham Greene. She had this incredible life. I think she's very similar writing to Graham Greene. And I had never heard of her till this year.
Oh, right. Okay.
And so that's why I'm banging on. I'm outraged. I read Bay of Noon, which took her 20 years to write and won this huge prize. And then I was like, why do I not know her?
Yeah.
And she's having a bit of resurgence. I've seen other people talking about her. But if you want a kind of 20th century classic, like really good, juicy writing, like up there with Graham Greene in that kind of...
I love Graham Greene.
Yeah. She's a female Graham Greene.
We should do Graham Greene as well. We haven't done enough men in our podcast so far.
They've had enough time.
But I would love to do Graham Greene. I'd love to do The End of the Affair. If we do Hazzard and then we do Graham Greene.
I mean, she was such good friends with Greene in the way that everyone sort of hints that something was going on.
They were bonking.
I think they might have been. And
if they were both like, oh, I'm a good writer, you're a good writer, let's kiss. I'm into it.
But what I like is it's like that level of writing, but you're getting from a woman's perspective. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
And Bay of Noon is like, again, one of those books that get like, it doesn't seem to be about very much. Like when you try and explain to someone what the plot is, you're like, oh, it's just this woman and she's there. And a lot of it's based on real events as well. So like she was working for the UN from like 18 and she was in Naples and she was working for all these people. So the detail was really interesting, but just her sentences. I was reading aloud her sentence. I was stopping people being like, you have to hear this.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. So that's my shout out to
Bay
of Noon, Shirley Hazzard.
We're definitely going to do a Hazzard.
Yeah, yeah. Otherwise
maybe for your birthday. Maybe a birthday episode. Yeah.
Thank you.
Can I talk about my on-screen dad, Adrian Edmondson?
Because
he released a book just a few months ago called Berserker. And I think this is one that would be such a good Christmas present, or if you're buying with vouchers.
Yeah.
Because whether that you're someone in your life or you are a comedy fan or just a fan of good writing, it's a vulnerable book and it's really funny and it's gossipy. And he's obviously a comedy legend.
Genius.
It's one of the most interesting books I've read about success, because it's about wanting to do something other than what you're doing that's working well. It's so fascinating in terms of like writing a show, writing a successful show, and then working again with a friend.
Yeah.
And then losing your friend. Like, aww. So there's just so many elements of it that really stay with you.
So it is a biography.
Autobiography and a story of his career. And it really feels like he is telling you the truth.
This is Adrian Edmondson, Berserker.
Yeah, really fantastic.
Yeah, I'd like to read that.
You'd love it.
The cover's funny.
It's really funny.
It's a good cover.
Yeah.
It's a good, because Harbour comedy covers. You don't want to be too funny.
Yeah, do you remember?
Tina Fey still wins me for the best one. Don't you remember hers?
Because Alec,
Alec Baldwin's arms.
Oh, is it Alec Baldwin's arms?
Yeah, I'm sure it's Alec Baldwin.
Oh, really?
And then her face. I always thought that's a really good comedy cover.
That is a really good one.
It's
normally
not so
they
funny.
Make you pose with dogs or something that aren't yours.
Or like normally it's surrounded by something, isn't it? Like flowers or like you've fallen into something. And you just see the head poking up.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah,
that's
quite a common.
Yeah.
Because it's like, that's funny and nice to look at.
Whereas for comedy posters, it's always taken from above, like you've got a big head and a little body, like a microphone.
And an itchy head.
Or scratching your own head.
Scratch your head.
How do I write a whole book? How do I do that? How do I remember all my jokes?
I'll guess I'm funny. I would like to read that one. That looks really good.
Yeah. But you don't want to read my next one, which is Ian McEwan Lessons.
Oh, we talked about this last week.
I told her about how I thought it was the best thing I'd read this year.
Oh, yes, you said that.
And then she read half of it on the plane home, and I was thinking she's going to hate this book. And she really, really loved it and found it very readable.
I'm afraid that Ian McEwan is going to listen to this and be like, what's your fucking problem, Cariad? I'd be like, I just didn't like On Chaswell Beach.
Okay, Ian, if you are listening, please come on, be a guest.
If you come on, I'll read your book.
I remember starting at Sussex and then finding out Ian McEwan went there. And
I didn't even know that.
I felt fizzy with it. Like,
oh, God.
Ian McEwan. It's because I was into The Cement Garden all the time.
You know, sometimes people say they're nice, but you've had one.
You had this with one of.
Yeah, I'm quite bad.
George Eliot's books?
No, I love George Eliot.
Silas Marner?
Oh, fuck Silas Marner.
There we go.
Fuck that book.
There we go.
But I did it for GCSE.
That nearly put you off reading.
Anyone who's out there who's read Silas Marner will agree with me. It's one of the worst books in history. It's awful.
There'll be someone who's just started it.
Oh, it's so bad.
Folded over the page to listen to a podcast.
It's so bad. Look, George Eliot's amazing, but that is not a good book. For GCSE students.
Yeah.
Maybe I should reread it, but it's so moralistic and turgid and slow.
Yeah.
My ADHD brain was not happy.
Well, Ian McEwan isn't those things. And Lessons is about a woman who gives up motherhood to write.
You know, when there's a writing, it feels... Oh, how do I explain this? Like, when you read it, you feel like they're telling someone else. They're not talking to you. Mm. It's like there's such a distance in his writing. And I always feel like I'm in another room trying to eavesdrop. And I'm like, what's it? Whereas Mantel, I feel like Mantel's whispering to me.
But I think with this one, you will feel like you're in the room.
All right. I shouldn't be convinced. Like, Chaswell Beach, I shouldn't judge one author by one book. I'm like the anti-Sally Rooney's.
Yeah.
I really hope
this book... It doesn't make you have to change your mind on Chaswell Beach, but it might change your mind about... Ian McEwan and his abilities as a masterful author.
I want to shout out to a book that, again, we were hoping to cover and it just hasn't happened, but it recently won a prize, the Polari Prize, which is The Whale Tattoo by John Ransom. I have interviewed John for Griefcast, but the reason I want to shout out The Whale Tattoo is it a book that I would not have picked up had it not been sent to me for Griefcast. So this amazing book PR lady emailed me, who had sent me another really good guest, and she was like, oh, I've got this guy, John Ransom, his book's amazing. And she just kept selling it to me. She was very good at her job. Mm. And the book came. And if I describe, like, it's sort of set in Norfolk. It's about a gay guy whose mum has died and he thinks a whale is talking to him. Now, that's hard to sell and is a lot of gay sex. There's a lot. Yeah. Like, that was the, I was like, whoa, did not expect that. Like, graphic. But it's such a beautiful book, and it's about growing up and love and not knowing who you are. And he is a genuine working class queer voice that, you know, is not very common in the book scene. And it said it just recently won the Polari Prize. And it was really interesting because I interviewed
him.
What
is the Polari Prize?
Oh, it's an annual UK literary prize for LGBTQ+ literature.
Amazing.
As in, you know, Polari is the language that was spoken in the 50s.
I didn't know that.
Oh, Polari is...
Oh!
Oh, that's
but stupid are you? Polari.
Polari.
I've never heard of it.
It's a language that they... invented in the 50s, and Kenneth Williams used to use it on Radio 4. So they have certain words that only gay men would know.
Okay, it's a Radio 4 thing.
No, no, it's not a Radio 4 thing. It's absolutely like a queer community thing. Wow, okay. But it was very shocking. So Kenneth Williams, so they used to have a whole language. So that meant, because it was illegal to be gay.
So two men
could have a conversation in the street about we're going to go and have sex and they wouldn't be arrested. So it was a really important subversive language that was needed at the time.
Wow.
And so when Kenneth Williams would use words on Radio 4, no one know.
Slips them in.
So gay men listening would be like, oh my God, he's using our language. So it's like very...
Yeah.
So that's why the Polari is called the Polari Prize.
Yeah.
And the whale tattoo one.
Yeah.
I've summed those things up very quickly, so apologies.
I know, but it's really enthusiastically.
Yeah,
it's a really important shout.
And he's got a new book coming out called Gallopers, which I haven't read, but I'd love to read. And I just, yeah, I interviewed him at Hay, but I said to him, oh yes, gosh, there's a lot of graphic gay sex. And then a gay man in the audience was like, yeah, and I really appreciate that. And John said this really sweet thing, which I love. He was like, oh, when I was younger, I used to have to go to the car boot sale to get books because there was no library and I didn't have any money. And I would, he said, some books would promise gay sex and that like the cover would be like, oh, this is going to be good, and it wouldn't deliver. So he was like, I actively wanted this book for gay men to be like, no, there's going to be gay sex in it.
Awesome.
And this man in the audience was like, yes, thank you, because that's otherwise you're sidestepping it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I see. He was like, it's very frustrating to get a book that had like a half naked man on the cover.
Yeah.
Think, oh, this is going to be, I'm going to get some experience here that will relate to me. And then it didn't happen.
That's amazing.
Like, yeah, I was like, oh, would never have occurred
it's
to me.
It's happening more in stand-up as well, where sort of bi and queer people, you know, doing routines about their sexual experience more graphically. And it is just representation being heard and less boring, sort of hearing things that you don't know about if it's not representing you.
But and I just caveat with, like, it is quite graphic. But then there's also all this, like, beautiful, heartfelt sadness with this man who like is, his life is just so sad, but it is, it's a really brilliant book. I loved it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm gonna shout out some really great books that I read.
Okay. Should we do a quick fire shout out?
I'm going to do a quick fire shout out. So Booth by Karen Joy Fowler. Karen Joy Fowler is amazing. So she wrote that We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves.
Oh yes,
you've probably heard
that.
Of, which is just amazing. And I can't say anything because of spoilers and stuff, but it's just really fantastic. Booth is about the Booth family. John Wilkes Booth was one of the Booths.
Yeah.
It's an area of history I don't know very much about. Again, incredibly researched, but more importantly, an amazing book. An amazing book about acting.
Oh,
actually, it's a family of actors. So good. And The Mysterious Case of Apperton Angels. Janice Hallett, I've read all of her books. They're all incredible page turners with sort of mysteries inside them. You can't sort of work out what's going to happen, and twists and red herrings. It's really fantastic. And then Curtis Sittenfield, romantic comedy.
Haven't read that one. I've read a lot of Curtis Sittenfield.
I love her writing. Romantic comedy I read, it's a really good aeroplane book. It's
yeah,
so readable.
I've heard lots of people say it's
and,
brilliant.
And if you like comedy or interested in Saturday Night Live or those kind of shows, it's quite, I mean,
that's
it's
good, because everyone who's recommended it has not been a comedian, and I was worried that if you read it and you were in comedy, you'd find
it reminded me
annoying.
A little bit of 30 Rock in that, what they're showing about the writing process and the hours at those shows. And Curtis Sittenfield essentially wanted to write a show. She'd seen so many people who'd hosted Saturday Night Live and ended up, like, so beautiful women ending up with the male writers, and she just wanted to show that it could, explore in her writing if it could work the other way around, where you don't have a not that attractive woman who's very funny and a good writer dating Harry Styles type.
Wow, okay.
And so it's good fun.
Another one you want to do a quick chat about?
Well, I've got two that are non-fiction that are maybe less quickfire, but Matrescence by Lucy Jones.
Oh, I really want to read this.
I'd really recommend it to anyone who is pregnant or has been pregnant. And that is not to say that if you haven't or are never going to be, you wouldn't be interested in it. I just think, actually, I think partners of pregnant people might find it really interesting as well. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful about creation and parenthood. And then there were things in there that did genuinely make me feel better. After having Theodore, I felt so like my career was over. Mm. I felt leaving the house was over because I felt so responsible for him. And so reading about the science of what is happening to your body to become responsible for another human being, basically feeling that things weren't my fault, that there was biology at stake and that biology would proceed over time. There were just lots of things that I felt very... I needed science to help me. So that one's brilliant. And then the other side of things, The Baby on the Fire Escape by Julie Phillips is about female artists and parenthood.
Yes, that looks really good.
And that one gave me a huge reading list, but it gave me so many authors I hadn't read, so densely well researched. And it's such a good accompaniment actually to Matrescence, or those two like really hefty books. And again, felt like really knowledgeable friends giving you snippets and advice and... No, not advice in that, not in a self-helpy way, but by talking about other women's experience, feeling like you belong somewhere on a spectrum, which is, do you abandon your children to do some work, or do you, how do you be all right with the compromises?
Yeah, I really want to read that.
Yeah.
Matrescence and the other one. They both sound great. I want to shout out to Fight Night by Miriam Toys.
I've started that one as well. Oh, she got me that one.
I love that. Oh, yeah, I did buy you that one.
I'm going to finish it. I'm going to finish both of them.
That's good because I nearly bought you that again.
That would have been so funny.
Maybe I'll buy a Fight Night. No, when you said that
would have been so passive aggressive.
That time you read it.
Yeah. You bought it for my birthday.
Yeah. She wrote that one, Women Talking, that became a film that did very, very well.
Oh, gosh. Is that her book?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then.
Because she went there and spoke to the people.
Yeah. And then, but Fight Night is not about that at all. But it's written in the voice of a sort of mad, very energetic 13-year-old. And when I started it, I was like, I can't read this. This is madness, because they're so full on. And then suddenly, you know, you just switch into their brain and it's just all from the perspective of that 13-year-old. And it's just watching a teenager understand and not understand adults. So sometimes she's like heartbreakingly perceptive and other times she isn't. And it's just like, oh God. But it's a really, really good read. And another one we mentioned briefly, A Delicious Life.
Oh, yeah, I've got that
by Nell
as well.
Stevens, which is
about... We'll do that on the podcast.
Yeah, hopefully we'll do. So get reading now. About Georges Sand going to Mallorca with Chopin, her boyfriend. Which I didn't know that they had dated. I didn't know she took all her children to Mallorca in the middle of winter. She sounds and dresses a man and smokes cigars and pissed off the entire Mallorcan population. She sounds absolutely brilliant / insane. And Chopin was also mad, and their relationship was deeply, deeply intense. But it's a really, it's like a good book in kind of learning about history, but from characters, because there's also a ghost involved who's sort of watching them. But it's really good.
Yeah, that is how I like learning about history, when it's not very factual.
Yeah.
When it's sort of like intuitive.
Yeah. And a little shout out for short stories. This one's called A Woman Went Mad in a Supermarket by Hilma Wolitzer. And she is like in her 90s now. She was also on the Griefcast. And A Woman Went Mad in the Supermarket was published like in the 60s. And so she had kids and it was hard to write, but she's recently written another short story about her husband dying during COVID. And it's a collection of her work. Mm. And she's one of those people who's kind of been lost, was a brilliant writer, was written like writing for loads of magazines. And I interviewed her and she was just absolutely fascinating and was really like surprised that people still reading her work. And her daughters had kind of been like, no, you should write it, like go back after her husband had died of her, you know, they've been together like years and years and years. Again, it's griefy, but not too griefy. And the first short story is absolute, like, you know, late 60s housewife brilliance of just this woman just losing her mind.
I really think we should put something up, which is your scale of grief books, because so often people want to buy books that people who are grieving at all different points of grief.
I have a grief library.
Like you do have one.
Well, as in like at home, I've got this.
I think you should share that with people.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I could give you from scale one of like, there is death in this, but it's not depressing, to like, 10, like this is, and also you're going to bore your eyes out from
points
beginning
of
to
like
end.
Okay, someone's really raw, yeah, but they still want something to read, they could read this, or you know, it's a few years on,
yeah,
it's a
okay, we can do a little grief roundup. I'm happy to do that.
Should. I think
probably
it'd be amazing.
Top number, I think top recommendation would be You Are Not Alone by Carrie Ann Lloyd. I think that's just a really good entry point for grief
books.
Okay,
the fact that you've done that really undermines the authenticity of the recommendations.
Oh God, I am sponsored by Carrie Lloyd. I should say that.
Yeah, that's just for our listeners.
Just for our listeners.
I reread Orcs and Crake.
I've never read that.
Have you not read
no.
it? No. Okay, so that's part of a trilogy.
Atwood.
It's the. That's all right. She's written a lot. Actually, not more than you think.
Yeah.
So it's part of the Mad Adam trilogy, and I'm researching for a play that's dystopian. Future, so I've been reading loads of dystopian ones, and Oryx and Crake, completely forgot what it was about. Oh. So I've read that one, and then halfway through The Year of the Flood, which is the next one.
Okay.
But that's really good.
Yeah, that sounds
for
good.
For people who like Handmaid's Tale and then think,
oh,
it's
yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a different kind of futuristic thing. Louise Erdick, The Sentence, is one of the most amazing books I read this year. Really, really, it's about a bookshop, it's about a ghost, and it's about Indigenous American people sort of coexisting with middle-class white people. Really amazing.
I read Ordinary People by Diana Evans as well, which I'd also really recommend. Oh, I'm slightly worried I'm thinking of the wrong book. I was about to say what it's about. You know,
well, look it
like,
up. Well, one of the books I read that was recommended by one of our guests on the podcast, Eliza Clark recommended Savage Appetites by Rachel Monroe. And I read that and I absolutely loved it. It's one of those books that's quite hard to get hold of unless you go to Amazon and find a sort of, I think it's out of print, but it's really fantastic. People who like true crime or feel complex feelings about their consumption of true crime and crime.
Ordinary People by Diana Evans is the one I'm thinking of, is set in South London in 2008, and it's about like two couples, and it's a very good relationship book.
Ooh.
I think if you've been in a relationship for a while, or it's very, like, you know what I mean, it like analyzes how people get when they've been in a relationship for a while, and the way they talk to each other, and the way couple friends are as well.
Okay.
And again, especially if
that
you
sounds really,
know
really
anything
good.
About London, you've ever, it's got really good London specificity, which makes you really feel like, oh yeah, that woman knows
London. Lovely. Okay.
Yeah, it was a really good modern book.
Oh yeah, it's recently written, is it?
Yeah, I think it came out very recently, but it's set in 2008 as well, which is like just enough. Do you know what I mean? You're like, I remember
to feel
this.
Really recent.
But yeah, she's a brilliant writer, Diana Evans. I really enjoyed that.
I really loved Trust by Herman Diaz, which my stepmom, again, she recommended. And I saw that it had won or had been shortlisted for the Booker Prize a few years ago. It just passed me by. And the kind of thing that would put you off is that it's about money, and like a stock trader.
Okay.
But it actually isn't. It's an unreliable narrator set of narrations. It's about who gets to tell stories. It's about the people who, a little bit like with wifedom and George Orwell's wife, whose name is
Eileen O'Shaughnessy.
I didn't want to say George Orwell's wife.
Yeah.
The people behind who don't get to leave their voice. It's really fascinating. Biography, who writes the biographies?
We should talk about that, because so Wifedom by Anna Funder, we mentioned last week, is this incredible biography about George Orwell's wife, Eileen, who has been written out of history by him and Orwell's biographers. And I'd also like to point out, like, even if you Google it now, people are out for her.
Yeah.
The Orwell lot are out for her, saying that she's ruining George's reputation, and she's like made things sound worse. And I just, it's irritating me, because I feel like she's just saying a point of view, and people are like, how dare you come for George Orwell? And when you read, you know, they're saying it was based on these one set of letters, and she's skewed it slightly. Now, sure, but I think she should be allowed to have an opinion.
I think sometimes people are so sensitive,
especially about George
because
Orwell.
Because you go, so someone has written a book to entertain us.
Yeah.
And in order to entertain us, they've taken a strong perspective. I'm saying this all without reading him. But it's a bit like the monsters thing. Like George Orwell isn't around. She's not slandering someone who's going to be terribly hurt.
Well, they're like, you know, you're attacking this great man. And it's like, yeah, she's attacking him and also saying this woman who edited his work and, you know, was an inspiration for his work and helped him with his work. And when he was fucking in Spain was there with him, which is never mentioned in Homage to Catalonia, is allowed a place in history. And I just feel like, what I'm saying is, like, please read that book before you join the people leaving one star reviews being like, she's slandering George Orwell.
Yeah.
It's like, as if this man is, you're not allowed to say anything about him.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to criticize him in any shape or form.
Yeah. I didn't know that Orwell had fans that were like believers.
Oh, yeah. Basically, yeah. That's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
It's funny, I think until you knock someone off a platform slightly, you don't realise how many men are behind that going, yeah. Not him.
Well, you either, I do think, actually, things that are feminist, that is yeah. what happens. That yeah. is what happens.
So I would just shout out to that again and, yeah. and be like, read it.
Yeah.
On a cheerier note,
okay.
We mentioned her, we've covered her letters, but I just want to shout out to Nina Stibbe's fiction, Man at the Helm, Paradise Lodge, and Reasons to be Cheerful, the Lizzie Vogel series, which I read all three this year. And Reasons to be Cheerful is just such a lovely book. Such a lovely, brilliant, funny, like just one of those lovely, you can disappear into that world and have a good time. So if you're feeling me shouting at you about George Orwell is making you not happy, head to Nina Stibbe's fiction work.
That's lovely. Just finally for me, I mean, I did love so many books that I read this year. I reread Secret History.
Still haven't read it. You bought it for me.
And again, forgot loads. It's great. It's great with reading. I actually looked at my bookshelves the other day and thought, what about if I get to 50, which is in 8 years, and then I just go backwards and reread everything I've read and nothing new.
You get a book
like a time quake.
You could write a book about it.
And so Secret History, loved it. And I'm really into Mick Herron now. Really into Slow Horses on TV, but also all of his writing.
My last shout out is, we mentioned her last week, but yeah, Catherine Rundle's Impossible Creatures.
I keep thinking you say Catherine Ryan.
Catherine Ryan's Impossible Creatures.
The audacity is, but it's different.
Yeah. Catherine Rundle's, if you're into your fantasy, Catherine Rundle, Impossible Creatures. And I reread, which I haven't read since I was very, very young, Diana Wynne Jones' Charmed Life, which is the first Crestomancy series, which is so dark and so brilliant. And oh my God, you forget what kids' books were like in the 70s. It opens with a steamer going down and parents drowning. So don't do what I did, which is try and read it to a seven-year-old thinking, because times have changed.
Is that because you have to have no parents to have an adventure?
Basically.
Is that why you have to get rid of parents?
Well, that's,
first
yeah, thing? All kids' yeah. books have. So there's a big
like
complaint.
Harry Potter, like, yeah.
Yeah. All of them have no parents.
Because otherwise all kids' books would be like, something exciting was happening, but Mum and Dad said I couldn't go out, I had to go in and have a sandwich.
Or you've got someone who cares about you and it's like, well, where are you going? And
yeah, I'll protect you.
It also
there was a scary ogre.
Impossible.
My dad told him to go away.
Yeah, it happens in Impossible Creatures.
Okay.
But Diana Wynne Jones is like one of the OG kids' fantasy writers. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't read her, do. And the Crestomancy series is, it's so good. 1970s classic, I think. I think it's 70s. Anyway, that was my last tiny little geek section at the end.
Well, there's a huge range there for
there's
people.
There's a huge range. Don't say you've got nothing to
unless
read.
Unless you're Ian McEwan.
Well, you're on his team.
Oh, absolutely.
I will be on his team.
I'll centre. I play centre on his team.
I'm wing attack. I'm behind him, but I'm not sure.
You're on the bench.
I'm on the bench. I'm on the rival team, mate. I've come to bust your ass.
Who is the rival team of Ian McEwan?
It's me and the fantasy geeks. It's me and Catherine Rundle.
It's you and hobbits.
I tell you what, a lot of us on that fantasy, we've got weak wrists. I'm looking at Catherine Rundle. She couldn't hold a heavy book either. She's very tiny.
If you are listening, Catherine, please.
No, she is. She's
got weak wrists.
She's really tiny.
Yeah, but lithe people can be strong. Gymnasts are very skinny.
Catherine Rundle.
And they can go round.
I've only ever messaged you on Instagram, but if you want to disagree about your weak wrists,
yeah,
I'm
come
on the
in
show.
And give me an arm wrestle.
Yeah, let's prove it.
Let's have a
let's
find
prove
out.
It. We hope you have a lovely new year.
Yes. Hope you have enjoyed your year of reading and look forward to a year reading ahead. Next week we'll be here with Mike Wozniak.
The amazing Mike Wozniak. And we're covering Hilary Mantel, Beyond Black.
Oh, yes.
That's very exciting.
Yeah.
If you haven't read that, get on with it.
Yeah.
So much to read. Also, let's say again, don't feel bad if you are not reading all these books.
Yeah.
I haven't read any.
That's why sometimes we tell you the story so that you don't have to read them.
And make a little note on your phone.
Yeah.
That's what I do. And then when you do have time, like, what was it I did want to read?
Yeah. Holidays, people like to get books for their holidays.
They do, so, yeah.
Albie, just read yawn. I think he's been snoring quietly throughout this episode. If you can hear.
That's going to be the rest of his life, Sarah. You talking about books and him being like, yeah. Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode. And even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one is coming. This one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.